你正在收听的是一段被误解的历史，一个关于误解、中伤或者错过的电影的播客。
Hello, and welcome to A History of Misunderstanding. I am Smokey.
And I'm Stephen.
And how the buggery hell are you, sir?
It's good to be back. We seem to have taken a bit of a gap between recent episodes.
We have, yes. It has been commented on that everyone recently hasn't got any time to record.
Well, there was that, and also that our last show was a bit more difficult to put out. It was a longer show, and we all like a longer one occasionally.
Oh, yes.
And also, because of us having the fantastic guest on that we did have, the technical side of that meant it took a bit longer for me to be able to edit.
Do you mean Sean, the lovely bloke Lynch?
Yes, that's the cunt.
For our takes.
Yes, and it was very nice of him to try to justify the time taken between when he recorded it and when we released it by commenting on my editing efforts.
That was very sweet. We will come onto that in a little while, but happy episode 42, sir.
Happy episode to you.
Now, before we kick off, would you like to tell the dear and valued listeners what we have in store for them this episode?
We have the initial thank yous. We will be then getting into our short reviews and then into the main meat, as it were.
We do love our main meat.
Which is Chinese Zodiac.
Yeah, yes.
And Zodiac.
Yes, that's, yes, as we said, the distinction of just have two movies that have the same word in the title.
Yes, we can only go one stage further than that and try to find two films with the same title, which we may do at some point.
We have plans for that, don't we, in the future? Yes, when we talked about it before, we were going to, well, kind of, apart from one letter, we did say we were going to do Repo Man and Repo Men.
Yes.
So, by a letter, that's not bad.
It's by increments we're getting there.
That's not bad,
I'm
really,
not sure people want us to be where we are getting, but we are getting
that's true. So,
and then we'll finish off with Smoky Spoilers.
I remember this episode.
You did? Well done. You cut me off now.
Yes, no, that's very true. Anyway, we will hastily move on now to our first part of the show, which is always is the thank yous.
By listening to the following, you are supporting the Pod Pals Independent Podcasters.
Thank you. So, who do we have up first this episode, sir?
First up today, for our dear and valued listeners, and more particularly for you, is some audio.
Oh, hello. A surprise.
A big happy birthday to Smokey. It's his birthday. Woo!
Woo!
Thank you so much for all the fun you brought with HOM Podcast this year. We missed out last time when people wished you birthday wishes and you cried. So, let's try and make Smokey cry.
Cry!
Fucking cry!
Cry,
you baby! God, stop crying!
Go on, cry!
No!
It's really hard to do, like, the sort of, like, affable, endearing, I like you, but I'm going to tease you.
Yeah.
Whilst at the same time, you have to pretend you mean enough.
Yeah.
It's hard to find that balance.
And you haven't met him.
That's true. No, he hasn't.
So we can say it was really nice to meet
it
you.
Was.
You're a really nice guy.
I'm not allowed to meet you.
It's fantastic.
But I hear your voice a lot in the dark of the night in my bed.
In the dark of the night, we were having a fiesta. And the fun comes to light. Smokey, happy birthday.
I once heard your voice. In the bath.
Well, there you are.
Fucking hell!
Did it make the periscope go up?
No, it just made me happy as I had a pleasant soak.
The ending.
Thank you for that.
He's crying at the thought of it now. You've done it. Well done, Scott. Scott wins.
I have a bodacious bod.
Bodacious.
Bootylicious.
Wow. Bulbous.
Bombeers.
Bulbous.
anyway, genuinely. Again. We try to do a nice message and we end up on your penis. But,
quietly.
Don't be all.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Keep up the great work. It was lovely to meet you earlier today and you do a great podcast and you do a great, lovely service to all the Pod Pals as well. Oh. So keep it up. Thank you.
Thank
and
you kindly.
Ta-ra.
Keep doing it.
Happy birthday.
Oh, God bless them. That was the Weekly Geeks.
It was.
Wishing me a happy birthday. Thank you very much, lads. It was lovely to meet you as well. And I don't really care about Scott's penis, but it'd be nice to meet the rest of him, you know. Yeah. I'm sure it will, when they let him out of his cage once in a while.
Well, I think they've got to get written consent from three doctors at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Christ. But no, thank you very much, lads. It was that was very sweet of you. I'm not crying, because you were all bastards and called me a smoking husk in your anniversary episode. So, yeah, no tears here, but many, many thanks. Cheers, lads.
Hey, Smokey, it's Robbie from Boston. Oh. I just want to wish you a happy birthday. Congratulations on surviving another year on this planet to bring us the films that we may love or not love. You know how that goes. And maybe yeah, you'll watch the Ultron movie. I don't know if that interests you or not. Maybe. Who knows?
I've seen it.
Will we? How about we mention movies with the name Smokey in the title? Check it out. We have Smokey and the Bandit.
Obviously.
Then we have Smokey and the Bandit 2.
Yep.
And you know what? Nah, let's not even go there. How about movies with the name Smoking in the title? There's Thank You for Smoking.
Great film.
And then the mother of all movies, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. You know what? I'm going to go out on that one because that is like one of the best. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to watch a movie that I think might interest you.
He's not doing what I think he's doing, is he?
Shh, it's about to start.
He's not. Robbie. I knew it was going to fucking do that.
Oh, Condor Man.
I bet you can hear me say cunt in Boston.
Wait, don't leave, Smokey. You're gonna miss the best part. Don't leave.
Oh, my fuck. Well, thank you very much, Bobby. That was very kind of you. I told you when we did the ABH episode that we couldn't be friends anymore because of your thing with the Condor Man. But I was joking,
really?
Sort of. Yeah. No, of course, we love you, Bobby. Thank you very much. That was very kind of you. Is there more?
Yes.
Oh, fuck. It's another year.
Guess who?
Guess
who,
yeah.
Another cunt.
My dearest Smokey Cokey, a very happy birthday to you. This is Adam from Attaboy Clarence and the Secret History of Hollywood. I apologise for not being the best person when it comes to returning text messages, but please know that wherever I am, and whatever I'm doing, you're always in my heart.
Oh. We did drink a lot together.
Yes.
We did.
The world of podcasting would not be the same without Stephen, the communist man-whore, with the world's finest collection of screensavers. And Smokey Bacon, Aldi's favourite person.
Oh, yes.
I shall never forget the night we drank ourselves gay, bought a Woman's Weekly and attempted to record a voice-off, which, by the way, was beyond saving. I tried, Smokes, but it would have taken a golden fleece to resurrect that particular recording. We'll try again some other time. For now, though, have the happiest of birthdays. Long may you and Stephen reign over the airwaves.
Yeah.
You're a great guy, and I'm honoured to not only count myself as one of your biggest fans, but also as a friend. Take care of yourself, and I look forward to seeing you again very soon. Bye for now.
That almost got me.
That almost got me.
No, no.
Yeah.
Dear God, did me and that man drink a lot?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me put it out there, dear and valued listeners. I wouldn't say I've met my match in drinking, but to be fair, he kept up. It was very impressive.
Yes.
His head wasn't the next day, mind.
No, well, I mean, I seem to remember that evening when I went to take you home, he decided to just retire to bed rather than come for the short journey to arrive down the road.
Yeah, but it was a great night. And thank you very much, Adam. That was an awesome message. And thank you to everyone who provided those. That was very sweet of you. Unfortunately, the sort of recording schedule that we have didn't really fit in around my birthday this year. So
no,
it was a shame.
There was an idea of recording a show with the JT lads.
We were going to bring them back.
Which you were going to try to organise, but it didn't happen, did it?
Unfortunately, so. We will sort something out with those lads in the future, I'm sure. But unfortunately, it didn't quite work out. But I got plenty of texts and emails and Facebook gubbins and from all of the pod pals and everyone else who knows me. So I want to thank you all very, very much. It was very, very kind of you. And that was a lovely surprise. Thank you, sir.
It's okay.
Yeah. So what do we have up next?
We'd have some correspondence on Twitter from Robbie Planko.
Of course.
Who has actually said, in response to episode 41, I learned to review films from Smokey.
Oh, right, okay. Right, yes, of course, because he reviewed Guns of Never Owned, didn't he?
Yes.
He learned.
So he was trying to pass the compliment back to you, which is very nice of him, but really, as I said, if he took the colonel of your...
I'm not a colonel anymore, I'm a major.
If you're a general accident. if he took Yes, the kernel of your reviewing skills, he's definitely blossomed it into something of his own, I would say.
Yeah, too right. So, I didn't think it was a copy at all.
No. And he did say it was excellent, as always, to hear Sean from Nerdchurch, the international podcaster.
Yes, he is, yeah. So, well, we all are, really.
Absolutely, yeah. I suppose, yeah. Well, you know, yeah. We've all appeared on other people's shows, really,
that's
I suppose.
All the pod pals have gone international. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So that's good. Huh. We also, in reference to the conversation with Robbie, we had Dave, who's Wilbro Jr. on Twitter, was commenting about the Carry On films, saying they're a good example of what's good in Great Britain.
Not all of them, though.
No, I did try to correct and just say just the early ones. And he also said that, in reference to what we reviewed last time around, that he tried to watch Birdman, but he couldn't quite get into it.
Oh, right, okay.
But due to be, you know, what was actually said on our episode, he's going to give it another go.
Excellent. I haven't seen it, so...
Which is very, very good of him to actually make that commitment.
Who was that again, sorry?
That was Dave, who's Wilbro Jr., who's a faithful listener of ours and friend of ours on Twitter. And the more I learn about him, the more I think he's a thoroughly decent guy.
Outstanding. So, and he's a listener. Yeah.
Well, I won't hold that against him.
No. Thank you for listening, Dave.
But no, he seems like a real good bloke. So,
right. So he's lovely and fluffy?
Possibly.
Good. Yeah, well, he's lovely and fluffy to me already.
As long as he don't listen to you in the bath.
No. Oh, God, Scott. Oh. Sorry. Right. Who's next, sir?
Well, there's the email from Robbie himself.
Ooh. Which, he's monopolising this episode.
Oh, he monopolises the pod pals.
That's
Let's
true.
Face it.
That's true. We can't really complain, can we?
Yeah. We all basically record the shows for him. That's and then other people listen.
Yeah. Well, maybe. We don't know. Well, all our download figures are just him repeatedly pressing download.
Yeah. Did a lot for Adam, didn't he?
Yeah, didn't he? Fucking just. Yeah, we'll come on to that shortly.
Yeah. So he said, in reference to the last episode, this show was brilliant and very entertaining. Sean was a fantastic guest.
He was.
We've got to agree with that.
We do.
And I look forward to your review of T2 with him.
Ah, yes, yeah.
So that would be nice to
Yeah, we have said that we could do about a 3-hour podcast.
Well, I think you very much you should and could.
I think we should,
So he said, hearing you guys speak about Tombstone was so delightful that I could smell the gunpowder and horses from here. My mind was blown away when Sean said Doc Holliday was a dentist. What the fuck? That's crazy. I actually forgot about Carry On Cowboy. I did say I would watch it, but things got a little busy for me. Now that I've heard your review, I'll watch it. Maybe I'll enjoy it. Maybe I'll unsubscribe from HOM. Who knows? Well, thank you guys so much for making a boring morning at work one hell of a start to my day. Cheers. Robbie sent from the past. So, yes.
Lovely man.
He is.
You know, I mean, going back to if he liked Condor Man, then he'd probably fucking like Carry On Cowboy. No.
Well, this is it, yeah.
That's a risk we've got to take. A couple more things. We do, as we said just then, we do need to mention Adam Boy Clarence and the Secret History of Hollywood.
Absolutely, yes. Congratulations.
Our motherfucking pod pal and good mate has ended up on the front page of iTunes.
Absolutely, yes.
Rocketed up the charts.
Yep, and well deserved, that is.
Fuck yes. I mean, obviously his latest shows have been great, of the Aspoy Clarence, and we loved our Scatterfire Canterburys.
Oh yes,
we
yes.
loved that. And also the Hitchcock one we were talking about, Secret History of Hollywood, that was excellent as well. Yep. So congratulations, Adam. That was very well deserved.
And for the continued mention of us and the rest of the pod pals, to be honest. He's hitting the heights in those regards.
Yeah.
But in no way is he leaving the rest of us behind in his affections, thankfully.
Not at all. So we'll put it out there now and we'll say on behalf of all the pod pals, thank you very, very much.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Going on to another pod pal, a fantastic podcast by itself, is the Ridgecast.
Oh, the Edgecast.
Ridgecast, yes.
So they have a different name by now?
I think they should, yes, but they don't. Yeah, because we tried Jerkast, but that didn't sound right, did it? No. So, yes, to Jake, Ian and Rashan. See, that doesn't spell Ridge, but there you go. We want to say congratulations for having reached their 100th episode.
Absolutely,
It's a fantastic achievement.
Yeah, it's a momentous milestone to reach.
It's going to take us about another 4 years.
Yeah, whether we'll ever get there is a different question. Mm-hmm. But no, absolutely well done, not only for that, but for also maintaining such support for other podcasts out there as well.
Yes, absolutely, yes. So well done to the boys there. Absolutely fantastic. Very quick one. Not very quick, but I will say, as regular long listeners will know, we very rarely get any activity on our Facebook page, and so when we do, we actually highlight it and say... Because I'm in charge of that.
Yeah,
don't even go there. So just like I say, we've had another like. We've had one more like on a Facebook page. It happens so rarely that we do like to champion it. And it is from Jeremy Nalon, who is, I think, possibly something to do with the Nerd Church, or maybe a friend of theirs, but who cares? He's listening and liked us. So thank you very much, Jeremy. Very kind of it.
Well, yes, I mean, that's very good indeed, yes, that we've reached how many likes now on Facebook?
78.
Well, that's good.
How many followers do we have on Fitter?
That's easy for you to say.
I know.
on the Twitter, we have 997 followers. So, yes, maybe I'm not pulling my weight.
I guess, including Susan Eisenberg and Chuck D.
Yes.
Fuck yeah. That's how we roll.
As it happens.
Wonder Woman and a fucking rapper. Get in.
But they're both people we respect.
Of course they are. So we're done. Is that all I think is done?
That would be it.
So we will swiftly move on to our interim watches, but I'm sure... Hang on. Mrs. Spooky, what's coming next?
A History of Misunderstanding presents some short reviews.
So, here we go. On to our recent watches. Sir, would you like to go first, as always?
So, first of all, I have the 2009 film, The Taking of Pelham 123.
The remake.
Yeah, starring Denzel Washington and John Travolta, amongst some other faces that everybody will recognise, such as Louise Goodman. And
yeah, he's good.
So, this obviously is a remake, like you said, and we've both seen the original.
We have.
Walter Matthau and...
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw, that's it. Which I think is a superior film to the remake. And that's not uncommon to actually happen. But there is a tendency for remakes to actually just be appalling and a waste of time.
Yeah.
And you think, what's the fucking point in that at all?
Yeah.
This wasn't that bad, which is mainly, I think, down to the fact that Denzel Washington is in it. And he's fucking great. He's known to have some talent at that acting thing.
Yes, he does.
And it's directed by Tony Scott. This is very much in his ilk as far as the film goes.
Definitely.
This is his thing. Mm. So, and he does his thing well. At least he did before he... took a step off a bridge. So
you say he took a step too far.
Maybe a bridge too far. The pace of this is, as an action piece, is very well done. And obviously it is following on from the original film, which, given the choice, I'd probably go back and watch that instead. Mm-hmm. But those who haven't seen that and who prefer something more modern that they can actually relate to a lot easier, this doesn't do a bad job of it at all, in my opinion. The acting is done well in it, and it's shot well, and it's got a full amount of plot to actually fill in the time without there being too many slow bits or anything that aren't necessary to the actual plot, so it all works well. And it reaches its ultimate conclusion and leaves you just having enjoyed the ride, really.
Yep.
It's not something that's a great piece of cinema in any sense, so although I wouldn't suggest people necessarily go out their way for it, it is something that if you happen to catch, I think people would generally enjoy and not begrudge the time of, even though it's not worth going out the way for. So in those terms, I mean, if it's on a streaming service and you're stuck for something to watch, why not go for it? But otherwise, just keep an eye out for it on the television or such like.
It's silly fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. And you've got to give, you know, the best acting plaudits, I think, for that film is for John Travolta's hairpiece.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it had its own trailer.
I'm sure it did. Yeah. Well, no, it's got its own heated room, don't you know?
With a masseuse.
No, it actually does. He has his wigs in their own heated room.
Mm.
I know, that's mental.
Yeah. What? John Travolta being mental.
Yeah.
What are the chances of that, eh?
All those really sane Scientologists out there.
Yeah.
Right, we will move on to one of my recent watches. My first one this episode is the 2012 film Silver Linings Playbook. Directed by David O. Russell, starring Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, Jackie Weaver's in there as well, Chris Tucker, a few other people you'll recognise. Taken me a long time to get around to see this, a few years. Obviously, you know, sort of caught the hype around it when it was first released, and obviously... Miss Lawrence won an Oscar again. Don't know why, but she did. So
maybe that's because the Oscars aren't worth shit.
Well, this will be proof to it. A little addition to this is our good friend. I think it was Miles over at the Nerd Church watched this recently and absolutely loved it. And I watched this recently and didn't. So I'm very sorry, Miles. If I think it was Miles, I do apologise if it wasn't. This was a shambles. Shamble-sized mess, as I have said before. Basic story is, after a stint in a mental institution, former teacher Pat moves back in with his parents and tries to reconcile with his ex-wife. Things get more challenging when Pat meets Tiffany, a mysterious girl with problems of her own. Now, even that fucking synopsis just sounds shite. Now, I'm not going to say this was shite. It wasn't terrible, by any means. There were some good acting performances. De Niro was solid, although he was, I think, again, reverting to his sort of ace kind of stereotype thing of...
His default,
I think he's always going to play that Italian-American thing. And so the main problem I have with this movie, apart from the ridiculous storyline that it had of this thing, and anyone who has suffered any kind of sort of mental problem, I think will find a lot of this quite offensive. But let me show you the problem with this film, right? I don't know how I'm going to do this. Right, I'll come as far away from the mic as I can. This is what Silver Linings Playbook is, right? Ah! Ah! And that's what it is. As I said to Mrs. Sparky, this is the film equivalent of a Pixies album.
I was just going
to
say, a Pixies song is yeah. Loud, quiet, loud, quiet. Yeah.
Loud, quiet, loud, quiet. But with a lot more loud than quiet. Basically, I'd watched this for about 25 minutes and I was instantly texting and going, does anyone actually just talk in this film? It was constant shouting. And I'm really sorry if I offend anyone when I say this, but just high-pitched American voices just yelling at each other for a long time got a little grating. Yeah,
no,
it did.
What are the chances of that?
I know. So it just fell flat for me. The ending you could see coming a mile off, so I don't know why anyone thought that was good. But I will give it a couple of bits of credit. As I said, De Niro was meh. Jackie Weaver, excellent as always. You know, absolutely loved her in Animal Kingdom. She's absolutely fantastic. But the real surprise out of this lot was Chris Tucker. I didn't even know Chris Tucker knew the definition of the word understated.
It's not a word that you would automatically associate with Chris Tucker.
No, this is a billion miles away from Fifth Element. Even Rush Hour, anything like that. He was great, very muted. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I couldn't knock him at all. So well done, Chris Tucker, for this. But it fell very short for me.
Can I ask, are the two principals, Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence, are they romantically linked in the film?
Yes.
Is there not an age gap that's, you know, you're more expecting a 50s or 60s film?
I think, if I remember rightly, they probably play Jennifer Lawrence's age up and Bradley Cooper's age down. So it's a bit more close,
right.
But see already. You're just looking at the front cover, aren't you? And you're picking problems already. And that's kind of what I did as well.
I've heard positive things about it from people who aren't film reviewers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those girls generally,
yes,
generally find that they get something from watching the film, and it speaks to them in a way that I don't think it would speak to me. So I've not gone out my way to watch it, although I also haven't gone out my way to avoid it. No. It's just that it's never occurred to me as one that I would expect to like.
No. I thought I'd give it a shot, but it wasn't for me. And yes, and I'm sure all those boys you were talking about who like it were probably on their periods or something, so it's fine. So
boys.
Sorry, girls. Yeah, sorry. So, not terrible, just didn't do anything for me, so I'll have to go straight down the middle and give it 5 horrendously awful dance moves out of 10.
Oh, right. Dancing in it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Leave it there.
Right, okay.
Well, okay, so what's your second one?
Mine is a 2004 film called The Forgotten.
Julianne Moore movie?
That's it, yes. Mm. And Dominic West,
yes,
amongst others.
That's right.
This started well.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought it was perhaps something that was a bit of an undiscovered gem up until a certain point.
Yeah.
Woman who's upset over the loss of a child, and then it transpires that evidence points towards the child never having existed and that she's actually just having a breakdown.
Sort of delusional battle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as you would expect in a film, that there's reasons for her to not just accept that, because evidence to the contrary, to make you as the viewer go, oh, hold on, maybe she's got something there.
Yeah.
And it, playing out like that, it initially came across to me that it might be a superior version of Half-Life that we watched Demi Moore. Because
yeah.
There's a similarity in, you know, losing a child and that kind of thing. And I was thinking, oh, this is perhaps how it should have been done with a talented actress and, you know, direction by somebody who knows what that means.
Right.
Joseph Rubin, I'm not aware of the name, to be honest, but it initially came across really well, and I was actually thinking, oh, this is good, this is going to be a good one to talk. And then it stopped being a conspiracy thriller, and just this supernatural bollocks just came in out of nowhere without any explanation for what it was about, really, and rushed then to a conclusion. And it was a massive wasted opportunity for what could have been a really good film. I mean, the acting, I felt, was good.
Yep.
You know, we both not only find Julianne Moore attractive, but she's a very talented actress. And
is.
By and large, most films I've ever seen her in, even if they've been shit films, she's actually putting a good performance.
Yep.
Even that one with Madonna.
We don't talk about that.
Yes, we don't mention that one.
I remember someone getting, like, sucked out of a car.
Yes.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, with no explanation, people just suddenly disappear, just get sucked into the air, and they're flailing around and disappear rapidly into the distance.
Yeah.
What?
I remember that. Is it Gary Sinise in it, if I remember?
Yes,
right?
he plays her doctor, her psychologist. Yes. Yeah, and there's Anthony Edwards in it as well.
Of course, the man who doesn't age.
Yes, not if he gets a wig. If it hadn't have started so well, I actually probably wouldn't have been so disappointed in it, because I would have just gone, oh, this is the same kind of half-light bollocks all the way through. Mm. But it started really well and was getting slowly better, and then just threw it all away for no reason.
That's silly.
And left me thinking, were you trying to lead us in the wrong direction, because that direction was actually a better one?
Yeah. Was it, what year did you say it came out?
2004.
Yeah, so it's definitely around the time of the Shyamalan phenomenon, wasn't
it?
Yeah. So that's what another studio was trying to do, the same bag of tricks.
Trying to do the same bag of tricks, which were fairly
shite to begin with.
Tricks. Yeah, so unfortunately it's one that I would give it a miss.
Don't bother.
To be honest, if it's on television, don't.
Fair enough. Well, I will also go on to a big pile of just miss this one out. Okay, I watched the 2007 movie, I Think I Love My Wife. Oh, yeah.
That sounds like a stage play farce.
Directed by Chris Rock, starring Chris Rock and Kerry Washington, Gina Torres, Steve Buscemi's in there as well, and Edward Herman.
Edward Herman?
A little bit of Edward Herman.
Oh, right,
in there,
so
for
there's perhaps one reason.
I will come on to that in just a second, yes. Okay. So, the basic synopsis of this one is a married man who daydreams about being with other women finds his will and morals tested after he's visited by the ex-mistress of his old friend. Now, I'm gonna have to be very careful how I say my words. With this review.
Oh, really?
Yes. I decided to watch this the other night, just wanting something light and frothy. Only 90 minutes long. Actually, I think it was another case of Premium Rush, where it was 80 minutes of movie and 10 minutes of credits.
Right, that was preferable for that.
Yes. So, what starts off as what looks like a TV film with a terrible Chris Rock narration, over the top. Just basically, the first 10 minutes is him walking to work and all the women he'd like to fuck because his wife's so boring. Then he meets this ex-mistress of his old friend, and that, you know, the lovely Kerry Washington, but she was just eye candy for the whole movie. Her character was deeply, deeply unlikable. And he just fawns over her and then nearly shags her, then he doesn't, and he pushes her out of his life. I'm spoiling here, by the way, I don't fucking care. Pushes her out of his life to go back to his wife and make everything right. And he does, and he has many, many happy months with his wife. But then Kerry Washington shows up and he goes off and nearly shags her, fucks it up, and then goes back and tries to make up with her. This was the pattern for the entire fucking 90 minutes. And I expected more, A, from Chris Rock, and B, it was partly written by Louis C.K. as well, who I like. So I expected more from this, and it went down and down and down and down. It's classed as a comedy. I laughed once.
It's got the same number of laughs in it as a Big Bang.
That's very true. Yeah. And I can't even remember what it was that made me laugh. I think it might have had something to do with him taking Viagra, but it was a very on the nose joke. But there you go.
Viagra on the nose.
I know.
You're poking out Pinocchio, isn't it?
I know. And this was going to be a 2 out of 10.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That is until the last 3 or 4 minutes of the film, when everything, yes, is Rosie, she's gone off with someone else, he goes back to his wife, and everything's all happy and good and brilliant again, and then they break into song, singing a song, Why Don't We Fuck Anymore. Yeah, so I'll let that one seep in.
So Edward Herman then.
So Edward Herman was in it. He had about 6 lines, maybe. He was great, but wasn't exactly a stretch for him. It looked like a paycheck for him, so I don't really blame him for that. The reason I said I was going to have to be careful with my words. There is
Why,
a...
Why, going to say the word nigger?
No, I was not going to say that at all. There's a stereotype of sort of black comedies.
Right.
Let me rephrase that. And comedies for a black audience.
Oh, there's
a stereotype of that, you know, shrieking laughter. Oh my god, my bitch! And hitting their people and throwing shit at the screen. Like they do with horror.
Tyler Perry,
like they do with horror movies, you know, that stereotype. Oh, bitch, don't run to the house, you're fucking mad! You know, that one. Right, so this, I think, was produced for that crowd.
Okay.
You know, because there's lots of very attractive people on the screen, and Chris Rock. And I just think it was tailored for that crowd, so it certainly wasn't for me, a 33 year old white man in England.
No, no, you might not be the most important demographic for a filmmaker.
I'm
really
certainly not his target audience, so that's fine, and I don't care that. But unfortunately, because of that awful, awful sing song at the end, this is getting a 1 overly large fake boner out of 10.
Right.
Absolutely fucking dreadful. Awful, awful, awful.
The question is that or Condoman?
Condoman. Bring it on. Put on Condoman right now, motherfucker.
That or Half-Light?
Now you've got me right one on Half-Light. Actually, I'd probably go for this because it's got a really attractive women in it and Half-Life doesn't.
Okay.
And no fridge magnets anywhere to be seen. Number three from you, please.
Mine is, unusually, an actual cinema visit. As you know, I don't actually like going to the cinema.
No.
So, yes, I went to see Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, really? I've never heard of that film.
I think it's one that slipped under the wire.
I think so.
I mean, I passed my review on to the Weekly Geeks.
I heard that, yeah.
And I had tried to catch up a bit with some of the Marvel films previous to this, and one of the key ones that I hadn't watched, although it's not the most well-regarded out of the bunch, was Iron Man 3, which I watched when I was in Marrakesh, which wasn't the greatest out of the bunch, but finding its own way. I mean, it wasn't as good as the previous Iron Man's, definitely. But
no.
I don't know whether that contributing to other things. I'm feeling a bit of fatigue towards superhero films.
I don't think you're alone.
And particularly the Marvel ones, and it's something that I think Marvel need to be a bit more aware of, because they're churning them out like nobody's business, and I'm not sure how well that's going to go for them in the long run, but hey, they're making money out of it, so...
Ant-Man's up next.
Yeah. Anyway, on to Age of Ultron. Did enjoy it,
yeah,
but really not as much as the first Avengers one.
Okay.
Or the majority of the rest of the output from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I felt the plot was weaker, and it wasn't that it was a sparse plot, quite the opposite. I think they tried to stuff far too much in. The points were either too short and not elaborated, or they were given too much time that they didn't warrant, and didn't tie enough into things to make it worthwhile them in. And it did too much follow a formula that the Marvel films haven't. And I mean, I understand that that is what they are about, where they have this build up to the climactic battle scene. It's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like ants of figures fighting each other, just crawling over, and a constant stream of more of them coming. And it just left me thinking, is this not too over much. Yet? It was too much. Mm-hmm. And Ultron himself, although fantastic performance from James Spader, with the voice work, you know, he's great and everything. He does really, he's one of those. This, I felt that the CGI on that character particularly was far too humanised. I mean, there was articulation of the lips and the mouth and stuff, which I just felt didn't fit with what the character seemed to meant to be, really. So that was off-putting, along with the just overuse of CGI to the extent where it was bordering on Spider-Man 3.
Right, yeah.
I mean, obviously, the dialogue did have some good one-liners in it, as usual, as you would expect. But I've never been a fan of Joss Whedon.
No, I remember your problems with Whedon from years ago.
Yeah,
the dialogue.
And watching the first Avengers, I actually changed my opinion and said, oh, well, you know, it's just been the context in which the other things that he's done has been in.
You did.
And then this has put me backwards a bit and thinking, well, that was actually a rarity, and he's good, but he's not this be-all and end-all, really. I think he's got a lot of weaknesses. It's weird that when comic book films have sort of reinvigorated Tim Burton's Batman, the reason why the Avengers and a lot of the Marvel stuff hadn't been put into production around that time was a lot of problem with the technical side and the CGI and being able to represent these things well. And I feel like it's gone too much in the other direction now, where it is too much of that not making up for the rest of it there. And I know the subplots are running through, and it's fine, you know, in some respects, if you've seen all the films and you've watched the TV shows and the one shots and all these things, and they're tied together, and that's, you know, really clever, and I completely respect that, and it's all working towards this common thread, and that's all great.
Yeah.
But this didn't feel like it achieved anything on its own. It did feel like a filler,
right, okay,
really, and it didn't improve upon what had previously been done. Visually, it was good to look at. It's got all the effects there, and the brightness and the spectacle and the action and attempt at pathos through the Hawkeye's home life, showing that, and that, I think, was interesting to actually put some context in, you know, somebody who is more human amongst all these people who are enlarged characters. But it's difficult for me to really summon up any enthusiasm for the Marvel Cinematic Universe in its next incarnation.
Fair enough. Well, I had that feeling after I watched the second Thor movie, but then Winter Soldier came out, and I was like,
Winter Soldier I haven't seen yet, and...
See, that's not over-reliant
and
CGI.
Yeah, and this is it. That's more a sort of espionage thing that you said it's GoldenEye, because I've seen that, and Thor 2 I haven't seen.
Dumber.
So I'm going to watch them both, but I'm going to watch Thor 2 first.
Oh, okay.
And then...
Get Kat Dennings out of the way.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And then watch Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And that should put it back on a high, hopefully. I don't think enough to actually draw me into watching Ant-Man, but it might keep me going as far as being able to then look towards the next Avengers film.
Fair enough. Mrs. Smokey took me on my birthday to see it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought it was a little too long. I only had a couple of gripes about it, and loved the opening tracking shot because it was a copy of the one from the first Avengers. All right, move on to my third and final one. Now I'll race through this. I watched the 2011 movie, God Bless America, directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, starring Joel Murray, Tara Limbaugh, Mackenzie Brooks-Smith. On a mission to rid society of its most repellent citizens, terminally ill Frank makes an unlikely accomplice in 16-year-old Roxy. Obviously, everyone knows Bobcat Goldthwait, man of the screechy voice from the Police Academy movies, but he's carving out a very good...
Should have been in Silver Linings Playbook.
He should have been, actually, yeah. Can you imagine him and, like, what's the other one? Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah. Should have
got him as well. So he's making a very good name for himself as a director. I'd heard about this and bits and pieces over the last couple of years, and really wanted to see it, and I'm extremely pleased that I have. Good. This is absolutely fantastic.
I've heard positive things.
I thought I might enjoy it, but it blew me away of just how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It is a huge satire on American life, basically, on American TV habits and manners and social mores and things like that. And as both me and you are big supporters of having manners and actually being generally nice people, of what do we say? We follow Bill and Tedism of be excellent to each other. So this is a film where people are definitely not excellent to each other, to very nice people who've just been downtrodden, and they go, fuck it, and start killing people who are nasty.
Yeah.
But I don't mean like, say, they wouldn't just go out and kill a mass murderer. They'd go out and kill someone who used their phone in the middle of the cinema.
Right.
Things like that. And it's just terrible bad manners and things like that. But it was, the satire was biting, especially against the American output on TV, against the way some people are towards each other nowadays, where it disgusts you to the point where you think, actually, yes, I think I am going to smash you in the face now because you're such a cunt. And it deals with it so very well. It's very funny. It's very violent. Some quite shocking moments in it too. But I've got to give Joel Murray full credit. As soon as he starts talking, you can hear Bill Murray. You can hear his voice coming out of him. He's got the look and the sound. And Tara Lynn Barr as well. She was absolutely excellent. Very, very funny. Very, very violent. And I loved absolutely every single second of it. I honestly think this may go up in my ratings, but at the moment, I'm going to stick at a fairly conservative 8.5 bullets to the chest that you weren't expecting out of 10.
Ah,
yes.
Positive.
Yeah, thank you all. So we will now move on to the films we have watched together.
And now, our feature presentation.
Okay, so we move on to our first watch, and it is the 2007 movie Zodiac, directed by David Fincher, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Chloe Sevigny, very many others you will recognise. It's got a fantastic cast, this one. Basic premise is, a San Francisco cartoonist becomes an amateur detective obsessed with tracking down the Zodiac Killer. As this is based on a true story, had you heard of the Zodiac Killer before?
I had, but not with any great specifics. I think the majority of people in this country won't have heard it, even those that were alive at the time, because it just won't have entered the consciousness of people abroad. But I was aware of it previous to knowing about this film, but only in generalised terms, as mentions of serial killers and things went, rather than actually this case in any detail.
Right, excellent. I just wanted to know, because it was exactly the same for me before I watched it as well. So, sir, what did you think of Zodiac?
This is a film that I had mixed expectations of, because obviously David Fincher and then the cast of Jake Gyllenhaal and Robert Downey Jr. and Matt Ruffalo, tremendous talents in my opinion, all three of them. So I went into it kind of expecting good things, but then worried that I was going to be disappointed, so trying not to expect too much in that weird middle land there. But I did enjoy it. It needs to be understood that it's not your usual serial killer investigation type film. Normally you'd get the build-up of frequency and severity of the attacks towards the conclusion of the person being caught, and you'd be seeing a lot more of the actual attacks happening, and to some extent some of the background of who the serial killer was, perhaps, or it focused more upon the people investigating it and their lives and who they were as people in a way. This didn't really do either of those things, although it did have a certain amount of attention on the lives of the people involved.
Yeah.
They were more transitory because it was actually the investigation as a whole. So people coming in and going into it, and when their part was played, it didn't stop the story. Sort of the baton got passed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't reach a conclusion in the sense that you would normally expect with a serial killer film. So it's a lot more homage to how investigations and policing used to be done before there was so much reliance upon the CSI technology
that
is so popular now in so many television programs coming out of the United States. You know, the profiling and the trying to decipher encryption letters and things, which was very interesting in itself. Some very intense performances that were incredibly well done, that's as expected.
Yeah.
None of the three principals acting in this let you down.
No.
I mean, it could be argued that Downey Jr. plays a certain stereotype of performances that he has done before in things, but then same with Jake Gyllenhaal as well, I suppose. Yeah. But I think it's more so that they were selected because they were the best person to be playing those roles, and they play them very well. And it does have enough considered plot in it to keep the story moving, despite there being quite large gaps between the actual events happening in the case of the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah.
Although it's not a quick thing that you would normally expect with the serial killer things, where there's, you know, the frequency of the attacks, and it's that keeps it moving. There's quite long gaps between these ones, and you know, they have to have have the effect of having it on screen saying about how long it is moving the story along.
Yes,
right. It does take place over decades.
It does.
Does this plot. So, some I can understand it may feel unresolved, but it's based upon a true story. Yeah. And unless they'd fabricated the end bit. And I think there is a film that is at least loosely based upon the Zodiac.
Yes, yeah, there is.
Isn't there? And that actually gives a conclusion that this doesn't, because it's got that license, because it's a fiction that's based upon it, rather than this is trying to keep a story.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it's actually just called Zodiac as well, I seem to remember.
You know, this does try to keep to the facts of what the broad stroke of what the actual story is. And in some ways, it's got European pacing, because it's not a bang, 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 quick things, but there are a few instances where you are actually thinking, what's going to happen, because it gives tense moments.
It does.
So it doesn't make it that it's a dull film, in any sense of the terms. And just watching the performances is, I think, enough to get you through. But beyond that, it is actually a good film.
Yeah.
So it is one I would recommend.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I love this film. I really do. I mean, this was one of the ones that I'd seen before and you hadn't. Absolutely, absolutely fantastic. I find this, going along with a couple of films I've had over the last sort of 10 years or so, as one of such a watchable film. It draws you in right from the very beginning and it doesn't let go. And I know what you mean. There are some bits that are slow, but because I like that tension building of it, and it really does crank it up. And even as you say, the few sort of sparse scenes of violence or killing, they're done very tastefully.
Yeah, I mean, it's more what you don't see than what you do.
Yeah, it's your imagination doing the work, isn't it? It's the old Hitchcock trick.
Yeah.
There was actually quite a few Hitchcock little tricks in there as well.
Well, yes, there was. Yeah.
Also a couple of Scorsese moments in there as well, I noticed, which is the moment in the taxi when the camera pulls up. That was pure Scorsese.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, but no, Stephen's right. The acting is absolutely sublime. Whereas we were saying that when we watched it last night, that Mark Ruffalo, just brilliant. Just such a great performer. Doesn't give the due credit that he deserved. And he was excellent in this. Very, very
good. Yeah, well, we said before that his appearance in The Avengers and such and his star hasn't risen to that level where now that's what he's known for. A lot of people only know the name because of that.
The Hulk.
It actually belies the fact that he's an incredibly good actor.
Brilliant.
And actually, even within the Avengers films, I mean, much as what I was saying before,
yeah,
the performances were good before in the Avengers, and him particularly, the ability to put across the emotion when, to be honest, there are in some ways limits to what that character is about.
Mm.
And he's a fantastic actor and underrated for a lot of the other roles that he's played previously and to some extent since. And this is one of the ones that maybe people need to check out to see the strength that he's got.
Yeah, as we said, this and Shutter Island as well.
Obviously, Shutter Island was one that we pointed out at the time, the strength of his performance.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just going back to what I was saying a little bit before, was I was saying about it being extremely watchable. I could probably watch that again tonight and not get bored. I'm probably following that. I've had a few films like that, like Gone Baby Gone, I was the same with that, and Mystic River as well. So ones that I can just stick on and enjoy.
Gone Baby Gone, I think, is very much a film that fits into the same style, genre, ilk a film as this, in the way that it is unfolding story in such a way that it's not bang, bang, bang.
It's an evolving piece.
That's it.
And with an ensemble cast.
Yeah, it draws you in, yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the ensemble cast things for me, you know. I mean, like JFK and things like that, you know.
I don't know, that's probably part of it with this, but I think this has got other elements to it. It's well shot and well written as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And the script as well is just genius as well. Yeah. So I really enjoyed this. And I'm glad you did too. So can we have a rating, please, sir?
Yeah. I would say that although the pacing on it or the subject matter might not be for everybody, taking that into account, otherwise I would suggest people actually go out the way to try and hunt it down. Obviously, seeing it at the cinema might not be an option, but I don't think you'd be disappointed if you did purchase it on DVD and give it a watch, and definitely try and find it on a streaming service. Go out your way for that.
Fantastic, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I can't really add anything more to what I said. Just great movie, fantastic acting, fantastic storyline, great script, absolutely loved it. It will be one I'm going to go back to again and again and again. And it's going to get the same as the previous film which I reviewed, which was God Bless America, and it is going to get 8.5. I'm going with the halves at the moment. 8.5 creepy basements out of 10, because that was a creepy fucking basement.
Yeah, but there's not many basements, are there? There's probably only about 8.5 of them in California.
It's very possible. What happened to the other half? Tornado damage.
It's only shallow.
Oh, it's a half a basement. It's like half a hole, isn't it? Yeah. Right, fair enough. Oh, outstanding. Right, we will move on to our second viewing, which we also watched last night. The 2012 movie Chinese Zodiac, directed by Jackie Chan, starring Jackie Chan, and apologies in advance to anything else I say, and also starring Ki Shu and Xi Xiong Tiao. I was quite pleased with that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it is about a man searches the world for a set of mystic artifacts, 12 bronze heads of the animals from the Chinese zodiac. So, sir, our first Jackie Chan movie of 2015. In fact, our first in the last year and a half.
Yes, yes.
We didn't review any Jackie Chan in 2014, which is very remiss of us. We should do at least one a year. Yes. Because, as anyone will know, we love Jackie Chan.
Absolutely, yes.
Our best film of 2013 was New Police Story.
Which was fantastic.
Which is an absolute masterpiece. Yeah, very, very good. So, it's got to go up against New Police Story and every other Jackie Chan movie. So, sir, is Chinese Zodiac a masterpiece?
No, no, it's not as good as New Police Story, which combines so many of the great ingredients of what Jackie Chan films are. This goes back a bit more to the Operation Condor type films. It's a fantastic joy to watch, though. You don't expect the kind of acting performances that you would got in Zodiac to actually appear in this.
Not at all.
When you get in a situation where the voices don't actually match the people speaking, you can understand there's going to be a difference in the portrayal of a character to what we previously had. Oof. But there's elements of Indiana Jones in this and the Goonies. Yep. There's elements of
Mission Impossible.
Yeah. And it's exactly what you would expect it to be. Mm-hmm. It's an adrenaline-fueled piece of silliness. And as with most Jackie Chan films, with New Police Story being one of the exceptions,
yes,
it's the set pieces of the fight scenes,
yeah,
which really do link it all together and mm-hmm. give you the joy and just the wide-eyed mm-hmm. amazement, because he's always seeking to go further and further and closer towards death. Personal injury and death. So yes, the plot is not amazing. It's rather silly.
Yeah.
It's a shoehorn to be able to get in the various different action sequences, and some silliness in the comedy sense as well, yeah, with some of the performances in between, which you expect from some of the Jackie Chan films. Just take an element.
Buster Keaton.
It takes an element of that, and some of the things like the medallion and Spy Next Door and stuff, and it takes a few elements tuxedo, of that as well, and Tuxedo. Yeah. And in some ways, this is an amalgamation of a different side to Jackie Chan of a number of different sources as well.
Yeah.
Same way that New Police Story was. It's the fight sequences and the stunts that really do just boggle the mind and amaze. And they're not short, any of them. I mean, they are quite lengthy. They do take up substantial portions of the film.
Yeah.
And it's just great, though. They do. And right from the start, I mean, it's just bang, bang, bang of just greatness in that sense.
Yeah.
It's not fantastic cinema, but it is fantastic physical performance.
Entertaining? Entertainment?
Yeah. Yeah. But the physical performance is fantastic all the way through.
Of course, yeah.
And we know about, you know, doing his own stunts, and we noticed from the outtakes, doing some other people's stunts as well.
Yeah, that was interesting.
In the film.
Yeah.
But the ensemble cast around him are pretty much just there for the sake of it, which is disappointing, because maybe it would have raised it up to a different level if he'd been able to...
Sorry, I just remembered Oliver Platt's in this film.
But some of his gang,
yeah,
if he'd managed to make a bit more about the characters of them, because I think that although trying to give them some backstory about the two of them, a couple that are fighting between each other in the custody of the child, and that, I think it was the wrong angle to take upon them. I think if they gave them a bit more distinct characters without that background, but actually made them distinct characters within the group, in a similar way to the Goonies.
Yes,
got that character differential.
That's dynamic.
I think would have added something to this film, because then it would have been less just a one-man film, which it basically was. And you expect that with Jackie Chan films a lot of the time, but this could have been a difference, perhaps. But yes, as you said, sir, Oliver was in there playing
himself, wasn't it?
Yeah. He does the job well, and what was necessary from that sort of megalomania.
He wasn't in it very much.
No, he wasn't really, but in fact, to be honest, the bloke who was a Chinese Gilbert Godfrey was in it more probably.
That was weird.
Yeah. So it's visually appealing and entertaining, and it's easy to watch and easy to just sit there and absorb this physical enjoyment and entertainment that happens in front of you. And at the end of it, you're just going, yeah, that was exactly what it was. Yeah, I don't need to overthink that at all, because it's Jackie Chan film.
Yeah, kind of agree, really. I mean, I think I may come down a little bit harder than you. I mean, it definitely was Goonies and Indiana Jones put in a blender, add Jackie Chan, and then put it in a big tin, and then on the label on the outside put a big stamp saying, with extra silliness now added. Because it was extremely ridiculous.
Oh, yes.
And you were saying about the plot. The plot didn't make a lot of sense.
No.
It leapt from one sort of conversation, not even an action set piece, conversation connection to another one, which had nothing to do with what the previous one did, and nothing to do with what the story was happening at the time. So it was sort of like, I don't know what these people are talking about, but, I mean, it's a film you could watch with the sound off and the subtitles off, and you could still understand what the fuck is going on.
The thing is that, I mean, you say about the subtitles, yeah. The subtitles we put on in order to understand the French that was being spoken at certain points, yeah. and found out that subtitles came in with some really strange consistency,
yeah.
in that some of the speaking in English, the Chinese characters was actually subtitled. Some of it wasn't, and then it led us to realize
some was dubbed Mandarin, and then some was subtitled Mandarin, but said in English.
There was moments when the French woman who couldn't understand English was responding to what was said by the Chinese people that was meant to be in Chinese, but not...
Which we thought was a big joke set up for the end, and
she did actually know Chinese all along, and she was some kind of double agent, but as it turned out, it was just an error.
Yeah, so it was like, okay. So that was a little confusing. But it's a Jackie Chan film, and it definitely harks back, as he says, to sort of his earlier days with the more sort of slapstick comedy thing going around. I mean, Jackie Chan always wears his influences of, you know, Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton and all this on his sleeve, and he's always said that from the very beginning, that the physical comedy of being able to do that, even if you were in a silent movie, you know, that's what he does. And do you know what? Fuck anyone who says otherwise. He does it so fucking well. I will say, it opened spectacularly. There's a great stunt right at the very beginning. Loved that. Absolutely brilliant. So 10 minutes in. And then, to be brutally honest, the next 45 minutes just lost its way. It was funny in places because of how bad it was. It was intentionally funny. You know, if you want to see Jackie Chan trying to escape several Rottweilers using a parachute when he's actually running along the ground, you know, give that a go. But then, last 20, 25 minutes, when it all kicked off and the big fight sequences came in, we were in heaven. We were giggling like little school children. We were shouting at Steven's TV, and we were having a whale of a time. And that's exactly what sometimes... Well, not always, because you're not going to be doing that with Zodiac, trust me. But with Chinese Zodiac, you will be. You'll be just yelling things. And at the end of it, you'll come out of it, you'll be fucking beaming. You'll have a big, big smile on your face, because probably you'll have hated what you've seen, most of it, but you'll have enjoyed the hell out of Jackie Chan doing what he does best. And this is a guy in his 60s, and it's just... incredible.
I mean, yeah.
You know, the stuff he can still do and put himself through because of the love of his art. Fuck yes. All hail Lord Jackie Chan. So, sir, rating please.
I'd say that this is completely inoffensive, so easy to watch, even if you're not particularly into this kind of thing, you can watch in a short burst and just see the silliness in it and enjoy it in that respect. So unless you have a serious aversion to Jackie Chan and his films, this is one that I'd recommend. Look for it on a streaming service and just let yourself enjoy it. don't be too critical.
Let yourself go, dear and valued listener. Give in to Jackie. That sounded weird. As I said before, if I chopped off the opening and chopped off the end bit, I'd probably end up giving this film about a 3 or 4 or something. Maybe four, maybe a push. But just for that last 20-odd minutes in the opening bit, spellbinding work from the maestro. And, this is a toughie. Yeah, I don't think I could ever in good conscience give a Jackie Chan film a 6. So I'm going to go with 7 really big cockheads out of 10.
Yes.
He knows what I mean. So you'll have to check out the movie Kiddies to find out that I'm not actually being dirty for once. So we need to move on now and go on to spoilers.
The British Board of Film Podcasts issues a warning that the following contains film spoilers in the form of cryptic clues and moderate to extreme cursing words. This may include the words flipping and cut. Listener discretion is advised.
Need to catch up on episode 41 of spoilers, the ones that we didn't get. Have we had any responses on the old Twitterverse?
We have had a considerable number of responses, ooh, to be honest. So we had Adam from Attaboy C, and he said, "So far, I'm getting City Slickers for Stevens, mm-hmm, and Usual Suspects for Smokies."
That's right.
And Sean's is The Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
And Stinky Paws got in touch, and they said, "Let's go with City Slickers, The Usual Suspects, and The Empire Strikes Back."
Right.
And then Zero Dark 30.
Bang on.
Andrew from Tulu Screws said, "Curly Cowboy, at a guess, City Slickers." Guitar Kevin said, "I think Stevens is City Slickers."
Uh-huh.
Bob Like a Bird.
Ah,
Curly Cowboy is City Slickers.
How did we not get that?
That's me. Empire Strikes Back for Sean. Zero Dark 30. And To Find Him. And Usual Suspects, Broken Mugs.
Excellent.
Asbats Allen said, "For Stevens' clue, this week's answer has to be City Slickers."
Fucking hell.
And for Sean's clue, the answer has cast to be Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. Stephen was very close with Star Wars, because I did actually say Star Wars, and right. I didn't specify. And then when he said no, I was thinking, fuck. But I think if I just elaborated, he wouldn't need, but he was right not to give it to me based upon that. For Smokey's Clue, I'll have to go with a completely wild guess of The Fugitive.
No!
And Robbie Planco said, Eastern Executive earns Wild West Wisdom City Slickers.
Yeah, fuck.
And then he also said, Weird Science, woohoo.
Oh, yeah, so, of course. You know. Yeah, there was a science one from Sean.
So well, that was the sum total of the responses.
Excellent, yeah.
That we had to them, and I think it was about an hour after we'd finished recording, or less than an hour. Mm. I sent a text to Sean and said, are you sure it wasn't Empire Strikes Back? And he said, yes, it was.
Right.
And clarified that I had actually just not elaborated fully.
Fair enough.
So I can accept that he didn't grant it to me since I wasn't giving the full answer, but I did actually get it soon afterwards. Yeah. Yours, however, I didn't get even at this stage of people coming through with the answers.
Right.
I still, it was when they came through, I went, oh, yeah. Yeah. But I hadn't got it independently, so...
Fair play. Yeah, well, I'd just like to say to all of you out there, well done, and you're all a load of smug bastards. It's a lot more difficult when you're on the spot. Right, we need to dive into our spoilers now, sir. So, yeah. Would you like to give me your first one for this episode?
Spacemen spoof and hide to hoodwink masses about Mars mission before disaster dumps them in the desert.
I was going to say Galaxy Quest then, but it's not... Is it? Oh, it's, is it The Right Thing? No, oh, what's that fucking movie called?
To read it again?
No. Oh, no, it's not Spaceballs.
No, it's not. No. You're right.
I'll come back to that one, because I've got the title in my head and I can't scoop it out. Okay, here we go. Slam poetry, massive heads, comedy butchering, and a woman called Ralph make you question matrimony.
Massive heads, all I can think of is Frank. Nope.
No worries. Have your second one, please?
Certainly. Teen twosome are cancer couple who hunt and harass abrupt author.
Try that again, please.
Teen twosome are cancer couple who hunt and harass abrupt author.
I'm going to have to come back to that one. Shit. Yeah. You should leave your mate alone, because you'll just end up in trouble. Fucking his wife, popping eyeballs, and getting buried alive.
Nope.
Oh, no.
Fucking dangerous, this one, isn't it?
This is looking very, very fucking dangerous, right? Third one for you, please, sir.
Please get this one. Delinquent damsel companions cancer-ridden codger before seaside cessation.
What's with the cancer going on? Isn't that Venus?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Have you finally watched it?
No.
But you knew I had?
Yes.
No forfeit film.
I'm sick of you going, oh, I haven't watched that one.
Oh, dear. Here we go. My third one. There's only one question to ask when dealing with a former child star and her psychotic sister.
Whatever happened to Baby Jane?
Yes! Definitely not a forfeit film.
Thank you.
Wow. Right. We will quickly go through these again. Give me your first one again, please, sir.
Spacemen spoof and hide to hoodwink masses about Mars mission before disaster dumps them in the desert.
I know this film. The Stinking Paws have talked about it, haven't they?
They have, yes.
I can't remember the bloody name. Oh, this is going to be one that I get when we press bloody stop on the record. Shut up, Tails. No, I'm going to have to leave that one. Fuck! I know it is. I know it! Right, okay. Slam poetry, massive heads, comedy butchering, and a woman called Ralph make you question matrimony.
Nope.
Nope, okay. And your number two, please.
Teen twosome are cancer couple who hunt and harass abrupt author.
Teen twosome, cancer.
Yes, they're the bits that are going to be more salient. The teen and cancer.
Yeah.
Are the two operative words in the entire sentence, really, for you.
Yeah. It wasn't that shit that, it wasn't that Never Let Me Go, was it? No. Or, right, that, or that Fault in Our Stars. Or...
Yeah.
Oh, is that Fault in Our Stars?
Yeah.
I've never fucking seen it.
I know, but
I knew it was a film about cancer.
Yeah, yeah. I was cancerous teens.
I was going to go for My Sister's Keeper after that, but no, that's fair enough. Okay. Oh, well, that's good. We've gone up in the world now. Good.
We've got half of them.
We've got half. Well, see if you can even get the fourth. You should leave your mate alone, because you'll just end up in trouble fucking his wife, popping eyeballs, and getting buried alive.
Nope.
Nope. Okay, well, you've heard them. We're not going to read them out again. Tell us what you think, dear and valued listeners, because, give you another opportunity to be fucking smug. Anyway, we should now go on to what is coming in the next episode. Okay, for episode 43, we have another special episode for you, dear Valley listeners.
Yes. Honestly.
So we are welcoming back the wonderful, fantabulous Stinking Paws.
Yes, Scotland and Charles.
Scotland and Charles of the Filthy Hiatus will be joining us again.
What a lovely pair of cunts.
And what a lovely pair of cunts they are. And those particular brand of cuntishness that they bring to the table will result in another, hashtag rape movies. Yes, where we will be reviewing the 1989 film The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover. Oh, yes, I can't wait for Charlie's reaction on that fucking thing.
Yes.
And I can't wait for your reaction on this one, sir. We are going to be watching not a hashtag rape movie, but just one that I thought I'd test Stephen's resolve. And we're going for the 2006 movie Stranger Than Fiction with your favourite Will Ferrell. Oh, yes. So, we should really, I think, get the fuck out of here, shouldn't we, sir?
Yes, I believe so.
I certainly do. So, please, dear and valued listeners, please check out the hashtag PodPals for us, all our friends out there.
Absolutely, and you can follow us on the Twitter sphere via HOM Podcast.
Yes, and that's actually something very important that we need to point out now, that is that History of Misunderstanding doesn't seem to be searchable anymore on iTunes, and it is just under HOM Movie Podcast. So, please spread the word on that one, we'll do it too. Yes, you can find us on everywhere, Facebook. Yes, Facebook. Find us on Facebook.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help you actually get some more likes, since you won't do it yourself.
No.
Yes, on Facebook. I'll mention it since you're not going to. It's A History of Misunderstanding. You search for us on Facebook.
Yeah, we are there.
And you can email us at ahistoryofmisunderstanding@gmail.com.
You certainly can. Please find us on all those lovely places. But for episode 42 of HOM Movie Podcast, I have been Smokey.
And I've been Stephen.
And no matter what time of the day you're listening to us, dear valued listeners, I hope you have a kick-ass time.
Take care.